Till I hit civilization.
West is that way. Look, Fontana, if we don't stick together, none of us will get out of here. We need your experience.
Then level with me. There's no treasure. This is all some kind of weird-ass science fiction thing, right?
Right. Pull up a log, Harry. It's a long story.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
So R2-D2, RoboCop, and Emperor Palpatine enter a bar. And out come The Eliminators, the movie we're going to be talking about today from 1986. And with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I am the king of bad acting.
And Trish Coughlin.
Hello, everybody. Do you remember last week when you told me the name and I, for some reason, thought it was about laxatives?
That would have been almost 4 weeks ago, because this is the first full episode of Season 8. I am your host, Jason Bishop. Happy bloody new year.
Yeah, it is 2022.
It is 2022. Wow. Do you have that 2022 energy in you, Trish? Do you feel that 2022 energy right now? That vibing of 2022?
It feels a lot like 2021, man.
No. See, the problem with 2022 is it sounds exactly the same as 2020. T-O-O.
Yes.
So let's hoping that's not true.
Oh, so yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's a redo.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a rewind. It's 2022.
It's the sequel.
More pandemic or harder.
We hope you enjoyed.
Despair-alicious.
We hope you enjoyed our clips last 2 weeks ago and Cult Movie Trailer Go-Go last week, which could inform you of some things we may plan in the near future. There are some things in there that may come up again.
Easter eggs.
We hope you were paying attention last week in Cult Movie Trailer Go-Go. And if you haven't listened to it yet, you should. It's fun. We got some crazy stuff in there this year.
It is bad shit.
Just like this movie. Oh my God. This is a Charles Band production, Eliminators from 1986. Believe it or not, I have actually seen this in the theater back when I was a teenager. I don't think it was like a big theater or anything. One of those, not even second run, like third run. Do you remember Esso Plaza?
Yes.
It was like, probably there.
Are you bored? Let's go watch a movie for a buck.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Esso Plaza.
Oh, I miss watching movies for a buck.
Yeah. You can buy home TVs bigger than those screens now.
Yeah. Yeah, and the seats were like lawn chairs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was a terrible, terrible theater.
Yes, but
it was great.
Exactly. It was a trial. And if you survived Esso Plaza and kept going back, you were a strong, strong moviegoer.
Or you were cheap movies for a buck.
Cheap movies for a buck. You go to the arcade next door and then you go watch a movie.
That was a good arcade, though.
It was a very good arcade. I remember arcades being good. Now I'm lucky to see an arcade.
Yep.
Was it the Movie Mill or the other place that was by Sunridge Movie Dome where it was like $2 or $3 for like second run movies?
Yep.
It had an arcade in it as well. It's like all the old cheap theaters had great arcades around them.
Hey, yeah, there might still be some like that. Yeah. I know we still got those cheap $2-3 theaters.
Yes. So there's a couple in Canyon Meadows. All this stuff about Calgary. You don't know.
No, if you ever come and visit, you'll go, hey, that was really handy. Thank you.
Yeah.
For telling us about all these places that aren't there anymore.
Well, yeah. Canyon Meadows, as of this thing, I believe is still going.
It is still open, yes.
This was a Charles Band production from 1986. I didn't know that the first time I watched it, and I actually just found out before I was doing my research before I watched it. And I'm like, oh, of course it is.
Yeah.
He'll throw everything in the kitchen sink at this one. And
it's so fun, though.
It is. I definitely have a lot of beefs with some of the characterizations because it's like, okay, we're going to do a little bit of Star Wars. We're going to do a little bit of Robocop. We're going to do a little bit of Indiana Jones.
We're going to do a little bit of Enter the Ninja. Like, there's everything.
Every popular genre that happened in the 80s is in this fucking movie.
Yeah. And then time travel.
And then you got the super smart scientist girl who, and I mean, every character's kind of guilty of this, where if they need somebody to motivate a scene, suddenly she's an expert at it.
See, I like her because they've done this with so many men throughout history and movies.
Yeah.
And I want to keep that because, well, like, honestly, it's good.
Yeah, but this is the problem with something like Doctor Who, where if they need to just move the story along, he sonics or she sonics her way out of it. And suddenly this sonic can do something else. That's kind of what she does, Nora. And to a point, so does the Mandroid. Oh, yeah, now we need a ninja. It's like, it's this movie. And the same thing happens with the bad guy, too. Like, it makes no sense that he's turning himself into another Mandroid, but yet has Emperor Palpatine's powers. That's not technology that he's doing anymore.
No.
It should have tied into what she was doing, because essentially that was the beginning point of the movie, where he stole all of her designs.
Yeah, and it is wonderfully nonsensical for the most part, but I love it for it.
Yeah. I mean, they set up the shield, the Roman shield, and it has something to do with it being pure bronze. And I think that's why it does have he was able to use it to make a logical field. But they never explain that.
No.
Right? His whole shtick is very poorly explained. It's like, they just show him periodically. They don't show what he's doing. He's just changing periodically. And you're like, okay, what the fuck is he doing?
I want rules to motivate things. And you guys know, having listened to the show a long time, how I like my rules in the world to make sense. So, you know, if Mandroid's got a gadget, establish the gadget beforehand. Establish Nora's personal expertise beforehand, because she's literally an expert in everything when somebody else is not.
Yes.
So, like, she's an expert in robotics. I'm not expecting her to know about Neanderthals and all this other stuff that she knows in this movie. And I love that she's smart. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but, like, it's impossibly smart.
Yeah. I don't know why they didn't just make him a database.
Yeah.
It's a super simple fix.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I understand.
That would be funny, because just shouting stupid factoids out like some sort of Twitter bot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be a lot of fun. Did anybody notice that Reeves at the end looked kind of like Iron Man on top of it all?
Yes. Thank you. Roman Centurion Iron Man is what he had.
Well, I can't say I picked up on that, but yeah. Now that you say it, I can't unsee it.
Yeah. Yeah. The yellow and red was kind of like, oh. Oh, yeah. Really?
Which is fun, because it's 1986. Iron Man wasn't a thing on the silver screen.
That is true.
I mean, and Charles Band, huge comic book fan. I mean, this was definitely a comic book style movie long before they were being made, like, at this level that we're getting now. And, you know, he made Dr. Mordred when he failed to be able to get the license for Doctor Strange. And I always said, I mean, before the new Doctor Strange movie came out, the best Doctor Strange movie that existed was Dr. Mordred.
And what was the... Okay, well, if he was a comic book guy, wouldn't Mandroid be more akin to the lines of Cyborg?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some of that, too.
Yeah, I mean, visually, he actually looks like very similar to Cyborg out of the Teen Titans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I saw it. I was like going, oh, okay.
Yeah, and he would use the name Mandroid again in another film. I mean, the Mandroid looked quite different in that film.
And it was just called Mandroid.
Yeah, it was called Mandroid. Didn't have any connection to this one, which is unusual because he does like to make his little connections between his adventure sci-fi films.
Yes.
And even his horror franchises.
Yeah, he's created a whole band universe.
He certainly did.
As opposed to the Blandverse, which we're still working on.
It's a Bandverse and a Blandverse. Don't get them mixed up.
There will be a test.
Mm-hmm. Was this Blandverse or Bandverse? The new game show from Invasion of the Remake.
Soon to be adapted into a board game, coming to Amazon near you.
No, that's too much work.
Yeah, and I don't want to deal with Amazon. We can go with Mastermind Toys.
Yeah. Or just a regular old party game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. We're halfway there already.
Yes.
Like a Cards Against Humanity type of deal.
Do you use your cyborg or your ninja?
Yep.
More like your frying pan.
Or your frying pan. Seriously, go watch this movie.
Yeah. I kind of want to keep in this movie is when Mandroid has his quote-unquote transport.
Oh,
I loved it.
His little tank legs.
Yes.
That was actually pretty damn cool.
It was really impressive.
Yeah.
Because it was hard to tell that he was sort of inserted into that because there was a void between his torso and the...
Yeah.
I mean,
with the budget now, we could just see him stick his legs to the side of this treadmill thing and away he goes.
Yeah. I think you could only notice it when he was going down the stairs and he had to put his other hand down there to keep him from falling over. But it was great. Like, and it makes sense. I mean, tank legs, go long distances, not get tired, not ruin your joints.
Yeah. I mean, if you're developing, this technology was stolen from the Nora character and it was developed for a space platform because they had those in 1986. Like, they thought they were Star Wars. You watch this, like,
what, I don't know what
era?
Time
yeah, it. What era are we in? Anybody, raise a hand, take a guess.
Right?
You're probably right.
You're probably right.
Let's just lay out the crazy, as kind of it appears. So we first see the time-traveling cyborg.
In a plane having a flashback?
Yes, has flashbacks to his crash plane, which... may have been World War II. it looked like a really old
fire or something like that.
Like, yeah. You know, his body was remarkably well preserved for such an old plane. So we're pretty confused already there. You've got...
Well, he was just doing a flight in Mexico. What World War was then?
Yeah.
Well, and they established that the flight crashed like 18 months prior or something like that. It was a really short period of time. They actually say how long ago the crash was.
Okay, so he got built and now you have a megalomaniacal...
Supervillain.
Yeah, he's a supervillain. He's been presumed dead. He's been preserving his body through grafts and transplants.
Oh, he has those tubes doing his blood.
Yeah, using this dude as an experiment for military use. He's militarized him to test his time machine. And for some reason, he's obsessed with ancient Rome and wants to rule it as the new Caesar, which would really affect the future, I would think. But
and that's why they don't want him to go there.
But why? Why do you want that?
I don't know. Maybe he was really into having slaves, i.e. Rome. He was really into orgies, i.e. Rome. He wanted to eat and vomit, i.e. Rome.
He wanted no working toilets, i.e. Rome.
He'd be a god in Rome.
Right?
With all that abilities.
Well, and Rome was really big on Caesars and emperors declaring themselves gods on Earth.
Yeah.
So it probably would have flown there.
So he's got... some minor personality disorders.
Yeah.
So we've got our super scientist who developed all this technology that was stolen from her without her knowledge.
Who happens to be a colonel in the army.
See, and I thought that sort of explained like her mechanical knowledge. I mean, she might have just been on the area where she like had to fix a Jeep and fix other machines there. So that's where I thought that.
Well, I mean, and she works for the company owned by Reeves, the big corporation. So it does make sense that her technology...
He has access to their database.
Exactly. I mean, he owns it all technically. So if he wants to misappropriate it, I guess he can.
Yep. Even if nobody knows he's doing it because he's supposed to be dead.
Yeah. And the Mandroid has escaped... His kind of father figure that he trusts had been murdered. That'll be important later because his son comes out for revenge. And of course, if you have two Asian characters, at least one of them's good at martial arts and happens to be a ninja.
Mm-hmm.
A not very good ninja, to be honest.
Oh, and let's not forget Fontana. So yeah, the ninja doesn't come in until 1 hour into the movie.
Oh yeah, he's a late addition. And the ninja comes in shortly before Caveman, but we'll get to that.
Just hang on to the caveman for a little bit. Well, let's let that float there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, Neanderthals. We'll get back to that. So we got Fontana, who, to me, have you ever seen... I know Trish has seen Deep Rising.
Yeah.
It feels very much like that character with the boat to me.
It does. It's a Treat Williams type of deal.
yeah, he really feels like the Treat Williams character. Although, I think they were going more Indiana Jones with the dialogue. Oh, Han Solo. Yes. He's the roguish hero. He's definitely a misogynist, not thinking that this really smart, capable woman. And that is...
I like how that changes. He has an arc there.
Yeah, and I adore that because it's done as humor. He looks like an idiot most of the time and is always proven wrong. So they utilize that to great effect in humor.
Yeah, they do. I think he's the best developed character in the movie, actually.
Yeah. Doesn't appear until 22 minutes into the movie, and he's first billed. All right. Well, I think we've laid out the crazy. Let's roll the trailer for Eliminators from 1986.
In a hidden fortress concealed by impenetrable jungle dwells Dr. Abbott Reeves, a brilliant but devious scientist with the power to create.
Help the mandroid from the cage, Takata.
Any malfunctions?
I had some trouble with this. Feels like a delay in the neurosynapse trigger.
And the will to destroy.
Move its memory, then dismantle it.
It's half human.
He must be eliminated. Colonel Nora Hunter has the brains to mastermind the operation.
You need a full-time mechanic, my friend.
Fontana, the river rat.
What are you doing?
I saw this in a movie once.
When he finds himself in a tight spot, someone else has to pick up the pieces. Kuji, the ninja. He has the martial skills to destroy his enemies. The mandroid. More machine than man. His special powers will determine whether or not they survive.
We got robots. We got cavemen. We got kung fu. What is this anyway? Some kind of damn comic book?
It is the most perilous journey any one of them has undertaken. And once they reach their destination, they face the most awesome power on Earth.
You don't understand. Soon I shall rule the world.
It will take all their combined skills to defeat him. Each one is the ultimate specialist in his field. Together, they are the Eliminators.
That was the trailer for Eliminators from 1986, produced by Charles Band, written by Paul DeMeo and Danny Bilson, who wrote and created the Viper TV series.
Nice.
Rocketeer.
Oh!
And episode 218.
Oh, some more time travel with Trancers?
Yes! Trancers! That might come up again. This was directed by Peter...
Manoogian?
Sure. Let's go with Manoogian. Manoogian sounds good. I'm liking that. I'm not sure. Now it's on you.
Yep, blame me.
He directed some stuff that maybe we'll go back and do someday. The Dungeon Master, Demonic Toys from 1992, which...
Please.
I actually hated that movie so much.
But then we can change it. All of it.
But it was fun when they crossed over with Puppet Master. Nice. Did they cross over? Yeah, they did Puppet Master. And they crossed over with Doll Man. That was good, too.
Yes.
And he also directed Devil Dolls from 2012. I don't know what it is, nice. But it sounds like another Charles Band, because if it's got dolls of some killer dolls of some sort, it's got to be Charles Band.
Speaking of killer dolls, did you see some of Denise Crosby's back catalog?
Oh, Chucky.
Dolly Dearest.
Dolly Dearest. Yeah. That's right. Dolly Dearest. Not Chucky.
First billed as Child's Play 4, but they didn't go with that.
Oh. This movie stars Andrew Prine as Harry Fontaine, despite taking 22 minutes to be introduced.
He's memorable.
This does kind of break the rule. Like, who's the main character in this movie? I would say it's the Mandroid. He should be top billed.
Andrew Prine had a huge body of work leading up to it, though. Like, he
That's
was
true.
Easily the most recognizable member of the cast in terms of the sort of central group of people. So I can see why. He was also the best actor.
I would also agree he was definitely the best actor in this movie. You might remember him from Rob Zombie's Lords of Salem.
Still working on it. He started working in like 1957. He must have been a kid. and has been working ever since.
Yeah.
Because he's pretty close to 300 credits, fuck it.
He's yeah. really
close to it. I was surprised we didn't, with the body of work he had, that we didn't find any crossovers.
Well, he was on Next Generation, and I thought him and Denise Crosby were on at the same time, but no, they didn't overlap.
Yeah. Maybe they knew some people. One got the job for the other.
Maybe.
Well, speaking of Denise Crosby, she's second billed in this movie as Nora Hunter, and of course, Star Trek Next Generation, everybody knows it from that. Pet Sematary, Deep Impact, got a decent body of work herself, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is really early on in her career, I think it was like her third or fourth film.
Yeah.
Right, so. She's just a baby.
This was really good for my teenage years when I got to see some side boob.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Might have been the first side boob.
And a little bit of wet t-shirt.
You could tell that water was cold. PG movie, you're either allowed to fuck or some nipple.
Yeah. But I mean, like, part of the wet water, the cold water, and the wet t-shirt, she was just out doing shit. She was a capable woman. I appreciate that. Yes. I don't care if you're not wearing a bra. You can do it.
Then they gave her the black tank top afterwards, going, no more nipple for you.
Yep.
Patrick Reynolds was the Mandroid. I don't think we ever learned his name, but everybody kept calling him John Doe. And we talked about him probably in episode 93.
Oh, we did not talk about him. He was a Hare Krishna.
He was Airplane, yeah.
He was the third Hare
Krishna. Krishna number three, uncredited.
Uncredited.
Okay, there's no way.
But yeah, it was Airplane. And Zero Hour was the original film that they stole.
I was so proud I found that one.
You did your homework. You never do your homework.
I never do my homework.
I'm impressed. New year, new you.
I know, right?
Conan Lee, who's got a way better name than his character, of Kuji, was in Lethal Weapon 4. And he's the ninja, by the way.
Yeah.
Roy Dotrice was Abbott Reeves, the villain, the supervillain in this movie, who thinks he's Emperor Palpatine. He was in Hellboy 2 and Amadeus.
Yeah, when you look at Amadeus was before this.
Yeah.
When you look at his body of work and then you see this sort of stuck in the middle.
You go, like, what happened?
This is the House in the Bahamas movie.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
This is the paycheck movie.
Yeah.
And he is hamming it up and having so much fun.
Yes.
Like, he's not terrible, but he knows he's in a bad movie.
Oh, yeah. Same with Harry Fontana with Prime. You know he knows he's in a bad movie. But he's having so much fun being in it.
You can tell the people who are having fun because they're fun to watch. And then the ones that are just doing their lines. No, we're done with one take. Fuck you. Moving on. Check the gate. That guy you saw in the thing one time, Peter Shrum, was Ray. And it was nice to see him because he was in a lot of TV stuff when I was young. And I really enjoyed seeing him. And he's actually been in two of the movies we have talked about. The first one being in episode 170, which would have fallen in January right around the same time a few years ago.
That was Galaxina, which was so much fun.
Yes.
Much like this movie. It's the same kind of batshit that this movie is.
We're hitting a weird January tradition now, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
And episode 218, which we already referenced.
Transfers.
That's right. Peggy Mannix was Bayou Betty. And I saw this character. I'm like, Trish is going to love her.
Oh, I did. I have two things to say about Bayou Betty. One, I don't want to waste her in this remake because she sort of comes in and leaves right at the beginning. And two, there is a point, and it's like, okay, it's a kind of a feminist moment where, yeah, sure, Harry Fontana hits her on the head with a bottle, but he'd do that to any guy. Equal treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this very butch woman who's competing for a fair in this bayou. And I love how Fontana gets the fair for this with Nora. She's like, I want the toughest guy we can find. And Bayou Betty starts a fight and Fontana hides behind the bar until the fight's over.
Yeah.
He's the most intelligent of the bunch.
Yeah.
Just eating olives.
And he just kind of falls out the front door to, like, all right, make it look like he beat
everybody. Yeah, he rips his shirt so it looks like he was in the fight. It was, and I love that little touch, the fact that he took the time to rip his shirt.
Oh, yeah.
That's what made me feel like everything in this movie was very, very deliberate.
Yeah.
Because those little pieces of detail, like him thinking to rip his shirt, shows how much thought went into the script.
That's true. You know, you could tell they were probably hoping to get Star Wars money out of this.
Well,
but it was way too late.
They were hoping to get, like, a second go at it. Like this team up of a ninja, a scientist, and a guide with a boat.
I'm surprised he didn't, but this wasn't Full Moon, so maybe he just wasn't allowed and it's not owned by Charles Band.
Possibly, yeah. And I mean, they did kind of, I mean, there's always ways around it, but the ending does kind of write out one of the characters.
Yeah.
It does. Unless she rebuilds him.
Yeah. Actually, two of the characters. Because Spot, don't forget about Spot. Yeah, Spot's awesome.
We'll get to Spot.
I love Spot.
By the way, Peggy Maddox was in a movie we talked about, episode 207.
The Out-of-Towners.
That's correct. Nice. Fausto Berra was Luis, and you might recognize him from various U.S. TV shows in the 80s. Tad Harino was Takata, and he was in Red Sonja, as well as episode 170, Galaxina. So we got a couple connections back to Galaxina. Luis Lorenzo was Maurice. Jose Moreno was the Neanderthal shaman.
Yeah.
Now we're kind of getting into local actors, Spanish actors, as they were shooting in Spain. So the Neanderthal was just grunting, but there are other ones that you could tell were dubbed over. Charlie Bravo was the bartender.
Yes.
He was in Scalps and Son of Zorro. Miguel de Grande was the chief guard. Also did various Spanish film and television, and he was badly dubbed over, as well as Gabino Diego, who was the young guard, also actually very, very good star in Spain. He's got a lot of credits, actually.
I like our American audiences guard.
Wouldn't know who he was.
He looks so young. Like, he talk about, when you say young guard, I'm like, yes, he's on work experience for high school or junior high school.
Yeah, yeah. And they just picked up a few local actors for these extras. But that's the entire cast. The entire cast.
Yeah, it is a small cast. Like, they clearly did it on a short budget or a small budget.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, it's all really, there's not a lot of extra characters in it. Like, there's no background characters. It's all follows these characters around as they journey.
Yeah, for sure.
You turn them bears over, Fontana, or I swear I'll blow your top half clear to Texas. Count to five.
That could take all day.
One, two, three.
So let's get into this craziness a little bit. We've kind of laid out the basic plot here of we've got the mandroid want to go back to kill Abbott and get some measure of revenge for destroying his life, what little is left. And he kind of wants to end his life. He's not too happy being this cyborg.
Well, he can't remember anything.
Yeah.
All he can remember is the plane crash.
Yeah.
She removes the memory chip that's blocking his memory. And even then, he doesn't really remember much.
Yeah, keeps getting flashes of that crash. And Nora does find a photo in the plane of his family.
But it still doesn't trigger anything for him.
No. And that's part of the problem. We get dead-end plots all over the place. Bayou Betty is competing for the fair. And then once her boat's blown up, she's out of the game.
Well, she actually says, I'm done with this. We're moving to Alaska.
Yeah.
Yes. I want her to be more of a pursuant in this movie. It's like, if you're going to introduce her, do something.
Well, I would say get the Ray and Louise character to hire her on as their local guides to find these guys as a tracker.
Yes.
That makes a little more sense, and then we can keep her around as a mercenary.
Or she could just be, we want these guys and you hate that guy, so why don't we team up kind of thing. Exactly. Even, right? Mm-hmm. Because they should know the area. They're the guards and they live and work in the area. I don't think they need help necessarily, but certainly a team up would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I think we've solved her issue there, just getting her more inclusive in there. And I want to bring in Coogee much earlier.
Yes.
Much, much earlier. That makes no sense. You establish him in the first scene when we know his father's been murdered. I say he's like on the base on the campus and escapes, or Mandroid helps him escape.
Or possibly you just have him say, if you find my son and tell him what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then that Mandroid's aware of him, and you can have him show up by himself throughout the rest of the movie, as sort of like as they all sort of work towards that same meeting point. Right. Just so that you establish that he exists and he's not this random character out in the fucking woods.
In my head, I wanted to make Coogee female too.
Yeah.
Just to mix it up a little bit.
And you could have Mandroid, like you say, he's a database, he's electronic. He electronically contacts Coogee.
Yeah, no, I think that's great.
We don't know when this happens, so we can send a quote-unquote email or a text.
Yeah, well, we can, I mean, modern technology, whatever future that lived in, I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
developed for a space platform, like, or just hostile terrain.
And matter transfer.
Actually, it does kind of, now that we're sending rovers to Mars and stuff, that technology does make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely does. And we have the space station, and we it was in development in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it did make sense that they were talking about space platforms because it was in the media at the time.
Yeah, and they would have been already starting to think about building the space station up there.
Yeah, and the shuttles had already launched.
Yeah. Yeah, so that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, so yeah, you'd have Coogee on his way to meet them. Whereabouts would we say we get them to come together?
Well, I mean, if we have Takata saying in his last breath, make sure my son knows.
Or daughter,
yeah, in this case. Then maybe that should be his first stop.
Yeah.
And then it's Coogee going, oh, you seeing that he's shorting out, this Mandroid shorting out, you need repairs. You need to see this person who Takata worked from and took this technology from. That sets that up.
Nice. Yeah, because he would know about that if he's on the campus.
Yeah, and then you could still have them have their separate journeys, and Takata can say, well, we'll meet at this point before we attack the base, because Takata has a rough idea as to where it is.
Yeah.
And they meet. And problem is, if we have the Mandroid as sort of a database, he's probably not going to need a guide.
True.
He's going to have like GPS and maps and all that stuff, unless that's like the thing that's permanently broken that she has to remove.
Yeah.
It's like that chip that doesn't work has that data on it.
Yeah. Well, and I would think he'd have some sort of capability to repair himself.
To a certain extent, yeah. But he would. Absolutely. Because he's got the huge database of what he can access.
I mean, that's how Nora inserts herself into this adventure in the first place. She's pissed her technology's been stolen and wants to get in on the action. Like, that's not cool.
He can only repair himself if he has the parts, and that's where she's important.
Yeah.
Right?
And it could also be the bit, too, where it's like the part of his brain, the part of the chips that kind of help him manipulate stuff. Like, it could be because his arms don't work quite as well without the right chip. He does need her to fix that, because even though he knows how, he can't do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the idea of losing the GPS tracking part of him. Then that allows us to fit Harry into the picture.
Hmm.
Right, because they now do need a guide, because he only has a vague idea as where it is, because that data is completely lost now because the chip got fried.
Now, I don't know about you, but I thought them going back to find the plane was kind of a pointless adventure, since he went nowhere to begin with.
And he didn't want to know anything about it. That's what bothered me.
It's like, there's no consent here. Poor Nora is forcing this Mandroid to confront a past he doesn't want to know anything about.
Yeah.
Because it's bothering him and upsetting him.
Yeah, no, it only set up the wet t-shirt scene. That was all it was there to do.
Yeah. But I think the other thing, too, is sort of like, I think she wanted to find a clue of some kind. We didn't know if there was anything in the plane, but if she'd found something that brought it down, that pointed to Reeves, that would have at least brought him in as part
sabotage.
Of it. Yes.
Like if this was some experimental flight.
Yes.
That wasn't a plane from the 1940s. But they did want to find the plane, though, because that was their reference point, because they knew that that was where he crash landed and was somewhere upriver from there. So they did want to find the plane. But when they get to the plane, the whole purpose of her going in there to find clues, it didn't make a lot of sense. You're right. Mm-hmm. Especially considering he was adamantly against it.
It was just there for nipples.
Yeah.
Now, how do we fix it, though? Like, I think an experimental flight makes a little more sense. I can see where she might even be aware of this test flight and like, oh, I think you're this person.
Or she might be like, that's my design for blah, blah, blah. Like, how the heck? I haven't even made this yet.
Or, okay, the flight. We establish her a little earlier in a different scene before they meet up. This is her dead husband. Maybe she's married to this dude, and then he shows up. Now she wants to know what's happening, and she has a motivation to do it because this is her husband, and her boss has fucked him up.
I like the idea, but I also have a problem with it,
mm-hmm.
because part of what I thought his journey was trying to recover his memories, and the lost wife and child, and that never came to fruition, but I that's what I wanted to see happen in our movie remake, is to have him get those memories back. And have that RoboCop moment where he's trying to figure out what's best for them as far as
true. Yeah. And that takes away the mystery of his past.
Exactly.
And I like the back and forth between her and Harry, which won't work if she's his wife.
Mm. Also true, yes.
Ooh, love triangle, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sexual tension from one side.
There's nothing wrong with using toys. Meanwhile, we haven't mentioned Nora's robot.
Well, we've mentioned Spot, but we haven't talked about
Spot. We didn't tell you what Spot actually is. Spot's this little robot that turns into matter energy. They call it some sort of matter energy
transfer. Yeah.
And makes no sense. Another thing that just is motivated by plot, like every character in here. We're not going to explain it. We'll just push this plot forward with things that can do things that make no sense.
Exactly. And speaking of another movie reference, Spot looks an awful lot like the robots from Black Hole.
I thought so too. Just smaller and cuter.
Yes.
Well, I mean, his plot point was that he would remind Mandroid of the flashes and therefore the time travel.
Yes.
So,
because he's cute. He likes watching cartoons. Yes. He can take over technology and hack into things. And then later on, Reeves is reprogrammed it, and even though Kuji destroys poor Spot because it's firing on them, this big hologram of Reeves comes out, very Star Wars Emperor Palpatine.
That was insane.
Insane, makes no sense. It's like you hit that point, you're like, I give up.
Yeah. I know, and that was the moment where I was like going, and the smoke came up, and I'm like, no. Yeah.
It took you that long to give up?
I was barely hanging in on the Neanderthal.
That was my point. It's like, no.
I was just hanging my hat on Andrew Prine and Denise Crosby and being like, they'll get me through this.
And they did.
Why? Why were there Neanderthals here?
Well, they do explain it, but was it necessary?
I don't think it was. I think we can introduce the time travel without Neanderthals.
Yeah, the only reason it was there was to have that rescue scene.
It was like
the escape rescue scene.
It was like Cave Girl. They just kind of wandered through the whole time.
Yeah. It set up one funny bit of dialogue. That whole scene was to set up one bit of dialogue where she says, they don't speak English. You could have just told me.
Right?
Yes. Perfect. I'll run the clip.
That takes care of them. Let's get out of here.
You know, they don't speak English.
So what?
Well, why didn't you just say, Nora, throw your bullets in the fire?
Wouldn't have gotten a free smooch.
You lousy...
Hey, let's get out of here while we still can, okay?
That's exactly what it's there for. But yeah. It's cute. Like, it's a Fontana moment. I mean, yeah. And man, when he's on screen, he's stealing his scenes.
Oh, yeah.
He's magnetic.
He's the center of attention every time he's on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take this by character. We've kind of fleshed out, well, not too many yet, actually.
No,
well,
it's hard.
Nor, yeah. I don't want to lose Spot, but there isn't a whole lot of, well, I guess we got drones and stuff. If she's developing a drone and takes it with her, not wanting more technology stolen from her.
A drone with a personality, I like it.
A drone with personality, but also, rather than like the matter transfer stuff, this could also go into like how Spot does things, is he would be a camouflage drone. And that's why they would send him off to go look at things, because he couldn't be picked up by anything.
It was being developed. Okay, she developed this technology for whatever exploration on...
Yeah.
For Mars exploration, whatever. Maybe that was the first part. That's the stuff that got stolen. And the next thing she was working on was this drone that would launch out of that fucking huge backpack of his. But nice. It never got implemented. And that's why they bond, which is something we never really see. Like, it happens, but we don't know why it's happening. And even the Mandroid goes, why does he keep doing that? It likes you.
Yeah. I mean, it has personality, but I'm not sure if it has that much personality.
Yeah. So it would make more sense that these things were meant to work together in the first place.
Yeah. And I'm not afraid to go with military application for this because she was military.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of establishes a lot for Reeves Corporation as well. And his motivation is he is a warmonger.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's into making military weapons and he's part of the military industrial complex.
Ooh.
That's the biggest switch we should have, because this whole ancient Rome time travel stuff isn't really working for me.
No.
And you could have it, you could also kind of keep Nora a bit in the area where you actually kind of sympathize with her when she's like, I'm making this camouflage drone so that when it can go out and search things out, and we're only aiming at the bad guys. There's so much collateral damage. That's what the drone is supposed to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Pinpoint technology, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think of this corporate military applications that Reeves is trying to control this. And I mean, I think we've kind of used this before, but he's an arms dealer.
Well, I think he's an arms maker, because we've established he has a company and he's stealing the technology from his own company. So I think that him just being in his company, just being a military industrial complex is sufficient. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's like Tony Stark. If Tony Stark went bad. Going back to that Iron Man reference.
Well, and I think
It's Stain, right? Yeah. Your first Iron Man movie, you have Stark and Stain. I see Reeves as being Obadiah Stane.
Yeah.
And rather than having the time travel aspect to it, which doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it makes sense that you would want to test your technology, but we're getting a little nuts now.
Yeah. Maybe we can leave time travel aside, but the other reason he uses his technology, again, is to create strife so he can make more money. Like, he doesn't have to be Caesar to be a warmonger. He can just be one now.
Yeah. The action can be with what Reeves has stolen and applied to his soldiers and the escape technology of Mandroid and the team he's put together. Like, that's where your action should be. We don't need Neanderthals. They kind of use that traveling trope, like, you know, when we watch something like Beastmaster way back in episode 2, where it's the journey that we see, or Krull, a lot of fantasy movies. Yeah. Again, lots of stuff mashed together in this movie, something I didn't even think about until right now. Yeah. But you have that hero's journey that's going on in here that I don't know if you need to do in such a tropey way.
No, it could be done differently. I mean, they're trying to jam action in to make it less boring as they're traveling through the jungle. I mean, the boat chase was great.
Yes. And I love how he subverts the guy's boat. He's like, I'm going to stay here, and then they're going to go crash. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And I understand when you're dealing with a Charles Band movie, you're going to want to keep things small. You can't, like, we're going to think bigger, right? You only could afford one boat chase, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So only so much pyro, that sort of thing, which is why we have Neanderthals, and it really brings things to a much more affordable level. But now, you know, we dream big, right?
It's a fantasy casting here, fantasy remake. It's
our thinking about it, you've got three big boat moments. You have the initial one where it's Bayou Betty and all the other people pursuing, and then he puts the torpedo out. Or no, is it the torpedo? Harry puts the container out.
I saw this in a movie once.
Yeah, I saw this in a movie once. Blows it up. Then they go along, but Bayou Betty's still on their tail. Then it's the torpedo. And then it's the guys who crash their own boat. So we got three big boat things in a small Charles Band one.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot going on in that scene. And he definitely had a lot more money than he usually does for this one.
Yeah, or he got some really good deals on some cheap boats.
Yeah. Dressed them up.
Yeah.
Same boat got blown up 5 times.
Yeah. And the no question was in pretty rough shape too. I'm surprised that thing even, they were probably pulling along behind a barge or something like that.
Yeah. It probably barely floated.
Well, at one point he was sitting there pulling it while she's trying to work on the motor. I mean, I think it probably, if that boat actually broke down and they couldn't use it for a scene, it wouldn't have surprised me if they just did that to be like, this is a good scene. And it is a good scene. Yeah,
this is the spot where we stop with the boat stuff because we can't go anymore.
I think that's why I think they went to land.
It's entirely possible.
Yeah, probably. Shooting on water is expensive.
Yep.
Well, I think we've figured out more of the characters and how to motivate them a bit and get them from point A to point B. I like bringing in Kuji early, so we've solved him. Nora's basically the same, but I think more specialized, and we've moved some of the convenience back into the Mandroid.
Through a simple fix.
Through a very simple fix.
And we fixed Spot a little bit.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of Spot having sort of like that predator camouflage technology.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't like him turning into light because it just seems like impossible technology.
Yeah, but it looked really cool on screen in 1986.
It did. In 1986, it looked really cool. But if we go with something more technological, I love the idea of him just being able to blend like a predator.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is it is a callback to the original movie because you remember he's painted with camouflage.
Yes,
and now we can do that. So blend in with its environment. So I like that. I don't think Fontana needs any kind of fixing.
No.
If you're going to steal from Han Solo, great. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
And I like his arc. Yeah. I like that too. But I wouldn't mind having a bit of a moment where when Nora's telling him, he's like, so there's robot, there's no Aztec gold, there's robots and all this other stuff. And he goes crazy and she's like, yeah, it is. But you telling me you want to walk away from this?
Yeah,
I don't want to do that. And he's like, damn it, I don't.
I love how Nora just lies at him. Well, we'll give you this. We'll give you this.
Well, no, she never lies outright. She says, I'll give you 20% of, or 50% of whatever we find. She never says there's treasure. No, not once does she.
Yeah, they're never looking for treasure.
No.
I don't know. Oh, yeah, the one time he tries to grab something, an alarm goes off.
So. Yes, which is also funny.
Yes.
But, yeah, and I love that moment there where he, and that's how self-aware this movie is. It's like I'm in a comic book.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just way too self-aware, and you know that these guys knew exactly what the movie they were making.
And I like the idea of it kind of taking the piss out of comic book movies. Yeah. And that version, their version, stole liberally from the popular genres of the 80s and just picked what they wanted off the tree.
Yeah. And parodied them to almost.
And now it's even in a much better place to parody the biggest franchise and genre in the world right now, which are superhero movies, which this essentially is.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, they say it outright in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars is still popular, so we can
their keep villain's a supervillain.
I like the idea of like your popular franchises are like John Wick, Marvel movies, superhero movies in general. I mean, those are your two big action sci-fi things.
Oh, crap. You could even have it. We could be like so on the nose where Fontana's like, okay, but I get to be Han Solo.
and we can even have a little bit of that hero's journey so he can go, there better be a fucking ring at the end of this.
Yeah. But we're going to keep it. There's no throwing in the volcano.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. That's a total Fontana line.
That is totally a Fontana line. Yeah. I like the idea, like, instead of having Reeves be sort of turn himself into a mandroid, I almost want to have him turn himself into like an Ultron type of character where he's moved his entire consciousness into a machine.
Yeah, because his body's like falling apart and it's looking pretty good by the end with all of his transplants and things.
Well, his face even healed.
Oh, I did say the one bit I kind of enjoy, I don't know what his plan is, but as the course of the movie goes, you see the different procedures. You see stitches on his face, like there is
a progression.
A progression, which I found really good.
Again, and going back to that attention to detail that was taken with this film to give us what we got.
Yeah, we see him working towards that superpower that he gets, like becoming that mandroid. I do like that.
It's quite good.
What if we threw in a little bit of Tron, where he's got his AI that's helping him along to build this body for himself, but the AI takes over at the end. So this big super bad, there's not much of Reeves left by the end. And you're fighting something with even less conscience than Reeves.
I kind of like that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Throw a little bit of crazy, but a different kind of crazy.
It turns the whole super villain trope on its ear, too.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have this guy who's trying to be the villain, and then he gets taken out by his own technology.
His own
and
again,
very Ultron-ish, where they're trying to create one thing and they end up with something completely different.
If you hadn't said Ultron, I'm like, oh, absolutely. I love how we can twist this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, that would be the whole thing. He spent all his life making this technology that's really just based to cause strife and disorder and chaos. And the AI could be sitting there going like, this is how I live. This is how I keep going.
Mm-hmm. Or you could even have that Ultron moment where it's like, well, you can't be trusted with this technology.
Yes.
Every way I look at it, you're going to, as human beings, are going to destroy the Earth kind of thing.
Yeah. You're going to suck at it.
Yeah. So let me help you along.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So my kind can take over.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Ultron Thanos thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he tries to woo him over to the dark side, tries to get Mandroid back on the team once he's taken over Fontana.
Oh, see.
Because this is his sibling, his older brother is the Mandroid.
I have the bit where he's sort of angry, where he's like, there's too much human in you.
Yes.
You are an abomination. You must be destroyed.
No, I would say, let me fix you.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would see the flaw and like, let me help you, older brother.
Yeah.
And let me fix you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
that's not going to go over well with the human side.
No. Exactly. But seeing humanity as a weakness.
Yeah.
But
rather than destroy him for it, he's like, let me take that human part out of you. I could see that would be a different angle entirely.
It's a bug in your programming. That human part is a flaw.
let me fix you.
And this all starts to fix the ending that I hated so much. I had so much fun on the journey, but that ending,
yeah,
I went, are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, when Kuji throwing stars some ion cannon. Yeah. Like, what?
To be fair,
why is that even here?
To be fair, that is a ninja move in most movies where the ninjas can put stars in the end of guns, and it was all over the 80s.
But ion cannon!
Yes.
I know.
But that does make sense in the way we're remaking the movie now.
In the 80s, it was all over the place. This made sense in the context of the time.
But that wasn't even what I was talking about. I was talking about how they beat Reeve.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, right. They don't even beat him.
That's true. They don't beat him. Reeves just thinks he's defeated him because he's put him in some cage and then walks away like a normal Bond villain does.
Yeah.
No, the good guys are never going to get out of my trap. And goes to do his ancient Rome thing and sets a time machine. And they just rejigger some knobs. Fontana hits the keyboard and sends him back to the beginning of time. Like, there's not even any dinosaurs. The Earth is still fucking cooling.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Well, it's a wonderfully stupid, ironic twist ending for the character. And I was fine with it in the context of this crazy movie. Because by the end, you've already gone, fine.
Yeah. Having him stranded just seemed really mean, and I loved it.
Yeah. There's that, yeah.
How they did it, though, it would have been better if they'd actually fixed it before he got there.
Yeah, like, I like what we've done now. We've fixed it because the ironic endings already happened before our heroes get there.
Yeah.
Because he's been taken over by the AI, so Reeves is gone. And now it's just going to be a full-on technological, like, shootout, lots of explodey stuff.
Yeah. Like a superhero
action,
movie.
Like a superhero movie. This is going to be fucking Avengers Endgame, but much less budget.
Yes. And, I mean, we can even amp up Nora's character, because, I mean, we've established that she's a colonel in the army, so she could be very, quote-unquote, Black Widow-ish, right?
Like, that's what I was thinking.
Good hook.
Yeah.
Good hook.
Like, if we're going to make them superheroes, let's make them superheroes.
Because there's moments, too, in the original movie where she's running away from the guy on the ATV and she's evading and she catches him and jumps off that rock onto him. She's capable. I mean, those seeds are there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's lean into it. Like, if we're doing a superhero movie, let's do a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So where's Kuji in all this? Okay. At least we know we're still going to keep the dead father aspect from the beginning of the film. The martial arts training and all that stuff. Oof. It's still rough around the edges, ain't it?
We could say Kuji is trained in martial arts and all that other stuff, but rather than your average run-of-the-mill sword and throwing stars, because of the technology his dad has been involved in, his weapons are a little more sophisticated.
Yeah, he could have like a particle beam sword or something like that, like where the weapons are what's really cool about that character.
Okay. Like his throwing stars are not your average throwing stars.
Yeah, if we're going to do superheroes, let's do superheroes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to rip them off whole cloth from Marvel
and
DC.
And that way we can... It's not going to be like a Bruce Lee, Shang-Chi, ninja. Mm-hmm. It'll have its own identity, whether we make him or her. But
yeah.
And I mean, you even mentioned John Wick. You could even make the character more of a John Wick character.
Yes.
Right? You killed my pa.
Yeah.
Not my dog, my pa. Yeah.
Right. You killed my father. Prepare to die. My name is Kuji Takahashi. I think that's Takashi. I think that was his dad's name.
Kuji Takahashi.
Yeah.
You killed my father.
Prepare
it's time to
die.
But maybe he's or he or she's like a super agent, like a secret agent.
Yeah.
Right? Like again, going back to superhero characters, like sort of the Hawkeye kind of character.
Well, inherited dad's smarts.
Yeah. But
creating his
access to all these super cool weapons.
Mm-hmm. I mean, dad's working in the military complex.
Well, you
has some access to some secret stuff.
And also, maybe it could be because dad is like, I feel bad about some of the shit I did, so now I have an assassin sort of undoing some of this crap out there.
We established that dad's a prisoner early on. Like, we don't really in the original, but maybe we do that. But he's still funneling information out to his child.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Who is then using them to create a way to get his father free. And they've already been on that journey trying to find Reeves' compound when this all starts to happen.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. What if we move the setting to Japan?
That messes up my casting because I went Chinese, but
that's fine. I kind of just want to move the setting, but I don't think the location matters that much.
The jungle is part of the story.
Yeah, that's true.
It could be Colombia or South America. It could be anywhere in the sort of the southern hemisphere.
You know, you can have Colombia, South America, like Argentina was rife with Nazis. You could have it where they escaped to.
Well, there's plenty of islands in that China Japan area where if we're keeping it secret and isolated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that region. It doesn't have to be in a Hispanic region.
It could be anywhere jungle, really.
I think the idea of it being a third world country is what kind of makes it work, because you have to have those American expatriates there who are doing the guide work and stuff like that. So it has to be sort of semi touristy in order for it to work, because you have guides who are there for fishermen and tourists who want to go on.
Yeah, so maybe along the Amazon and the Congo or something.
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah,
you don't want high traffic areas.
But you still want a reason for those guides to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because rules, right? Like you were saying, is you have to be able to explain why these guides have a presence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've come up with our own level of crazy in this.
But oh, yeah.
It kind of works in a more of the contemporary tropes that are... Like, if this is going to take the piss of tropes, let's with the new ones.
Let's go right
for it. The only thing we're missing is Harry Potter.
Unless they're not guides. They're treasure hunters.
Well, I mean, that has been established in the movie as it is.
Exactly. And that would then explain Fontana's competency with other things.
Well, they use the guiding to help finance their hunts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you do have to set up that conflict between Bayou Betty and Fontana too, right?
Yeah, where they've already got some sort of rivalry, and then you know, one's been hired to track the Mandroid, and then the other's helping them. So
yeah,
I mean, we kind of established it early by accident.
Yeah,
yeah, I like that.
And we can keep her around and as a paid heavy, and her people,
and a thorn in their side, which I like.
Yeah, and I like the idea of that sort of whole group being involved further into the movie, because that drives our action more than bringing in Neanderthals inexplicably, because we've completely gotten rid of time travel now.
Yeah, so we don't need the Neanderthals, so we've replaced them with more action sequences, these people. I like the idea of maybe as we get closer to the compound and we've seen Reeves / the AI has started experimenting on his own men or creating new droids in the area of his
hybrids
compound.
Hybrids, the Mandroid and...
Yeah, this new version of technology. And Betty going, what the fuck?
And bailing?
And it's starting to happen to some of her people. Yeah. And bailing to the other side.
Or bailing still. We still have that great moment. So I'm done. Let's go to Alaska.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm going to Alaska. Keep the line if you want to keep the line.
I love the line.
I like the idea of her coming in, but at the same time, her bailing it as a humor bit and just take the...
But nearer to the end,
Nearer to the end and going, you know what? Not worth it anymore.
No.
Oh, and you know what? That would make the line about sled dogs make even more sense, because she's like going, technology, freaking technology everywhere. No, sled dogs.
Yeah.
Cabin, middle of nowhere. I'm out.
I like it.
Yeah, it totally works for me now. Yeah, and you could have the peril be Reeves' protection measures. So it can be traps and minefields and environmental effects that can be causing problems for them as much as Neanderthals. For that peril. And you could still have the rescue scene where Nora and Fontana do get captured by droids or drones of some sort, and they still have that funny moment somehow, right? Where it's like, well, they don't understand us, so you didn't have to whisper it in my ear.
Yeah, we get to keep some of those silly little moments where those Fontana-isms.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you get rid of the randomness of the events as well. They're all very much related to their journey. Yes.
Oh, and then she communicates with Spot. Like, I still like Spot as like a kind of a semi-sentient, like kind of toy thing, where he's like going, yeah, and Spot was wondering why he didn't whisper in my ear either. He was in there. He didn't hear a thing.
Yeah, I like that. Because, Spot felt, you're right, kind of plopped in to fix problems.
Well, problem with the movie too is, you know, they're there to fix problems, and then when they're no longer useful, they get thrown out the door.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not explained very well.
Yeah.
I mean, Spot did serve a purpose. Spot ultimately did bring the message to them.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So whatever that codes to the building or I don't know, whatever.
The ventilation shaft.
Well, and the message from Reeve.
The message from Reeve. Yeah. But I do like the idea of Spot still getting destroyed because he is the cute one, the one that, that pulls on the heartstrings a little bit. And you're like, oh man, I like Spot.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, and with us making our villain completely AI,
that makes more sense.
How it got into Spot and passed on the message.
It makes much more sense.
And he tries to use Spot
to
hack. No, to hack into the Mandroid.
Yes,
because Spot, now we've established
connected to the backpack.
Yeah.
So we actually get a point where the Mandroid loses control of his technology.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that. It makes a lot more sense, and it adds more drama and gravitas to the whole scene.
Yeah, much more Jeopardy than this little bot shooting lasers.
That we didn't know it had in the first place.
Yeah.
That well, never he wasn't set up for that. Shit's what she says immediately. Yeah. He's not supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah. So this is a much different, but it's a similar idea, but something with much more jeopardy.
And a lot more fun.
And a lot more
fun. It is, I mean, not to say this first one, it's still really, really fun.
But that also gives Nora some like moments to really shine to keep that hacking at bay and try to bring back that humanity.
Exactly.
Are we still, spoiler, watch the movie before we go too much further? Because they kill Mandroid.
You already said that.
No, I didn't. I hinted at it, but I never said it.
One of the characters doesn't make it. Yeah. That's all we got.
That's all I said.
But then I said she could rebuild him, so I basically...
Oh, so that's spoiler. But
you could have been talking about Spot.
It could have been. But
well, God damn it. Here we are now.
I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with it, too, because it feels like a little bit like he goes out heroically on his own terms. And a little bit of mercy as well.
Yeah.
Like, he was asking, begging to be destroyed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'd like to keep that. But what I didn't like about it was the fact that it served no purpose. He didn't accomplish anything with the death. And
well, he freed them from dying from the electronic cube.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, but I think that it could serve more purpose.
Yeah.
Towards the defeat.
We should see that final confrontation with our super AI now.
Yeah.
I felt that even in the original movie, like, this has all been about the Mandroid, and then he's not there for the final confrontation with Reeves.
Exactly. It felt incomplete.
Yeah. We should get him to that point. Yeah.
Exactly. Where his sacrifice distracts the Reeve bot enough to allow Nora to get to the control panel to start to deprogram him or shut him down.
Mm-hmm. To go back to a classic 80s, it would be sort of a War Games type of ending where it's kind of he's distracting the AI with something kind of wild because that's his human side. And he's like, I'm not giving it up. And like the AI is consistently trying to undermine it. And he's like, no.
Yeah. And it's still a temporary defeat because I think the AI is probably very Lawnmower Man implanted himself in the internet.
Yeah, which leads to set up for sequels and stuff like that.
To instead rise again.
Yeah, instead of just killing off your villain like every Marvel movie.
Yeah. but it's going to be tough to get that
until physical. Iron Man makes a new one.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to get that physical body back. So it'll take a while for him to make his return.
Yeah, and that's also gives us kind of that ending of him being in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's stuck in the internet, so he has freedom.
We got the same ending in the end.
Yes, I'm okay with that.
But you can have it. It's so. Yeah. Well, what's weird is you can have the AI sort of destroyed, but you have a bit of the Reeves where he's stuck out there. He's like going, oh, this is what it's like to not have a body and just be a consciousness. This sucks hard.
It's stuck in some AOL chat room that nobody goes to anymore.
Yeah.
It's on Bing. ICQ, remember ICQ?
Is that why my computer every time it updates it changes all my defaults back to Bing?
Yeah.
that's the AI.
I shall live again through Bing.
Okay, let's recast this thing. Oh God. Okay, this is gonna be fun. I had a lot of fun recasting this, to be honest.
I did too, because I already planned to lean into the whole superhero thing, so I cast actors from superhero movies.
I didn't intentionally, but I do have some thinking. Yeah, I don't even think it was even on my mind, but when I did my casting, but it certainly works well in that context.
Only one of my cast members has not been in a superhero movie.
Okay. Well, let's get to it.
Okay. So I started with my Mandroid. I cast Winston Duke from Black Panther.
Okay. Like it.
For my Nora, I went with Kobe Smulders.
Oh.
Nice.
For my Harry Fontana, I went with Donald Logue.
Okay.
I think he'd be a great Harry Fontana.
He would. He would. Yeah.
For my Kuji, I went with Simu Liu from Shang-Chi.
I didn't. I almost did it. And I just figured Trish was going to do it for sure. So I'm like, I'm going to stay away from it because she likes him right now.
I'm deeply in love with him.
Yeah. I knew you would go there.
Yeah. I just did it. But I would also go. Actually, I fucking would love Awkwafina in that role, actually, now that I think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Let me switch it. I would just Awkwafina because I think she'd have a blast.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
For my Abbott Reeves, I went with Tim Roth.
Nice.
Oh, I like that too. That's very good.
And for my Takata, I went with Chow Yun-Fat.
Yes.
Sweet.
And then for my director, because this was so batshit, I went with a batshit director with Taika Waititi.
Very good.
That works for me. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going superhero. Let's
bonkers with humor. Yeah. It'll work.
I certainly used a director that's known for bonkers action movies.
All right. My turn?
Yeah. Why not?
Okay. For Nora Hunter, I went with Rosario Dawson.
Okay.
I thought that would be different. For Harry Fontana, I went with Adam Rodriguez, who is on CSI Miami, and he was in Magic Mike.
Oh.
Okay, yeah.
I'm like, nice. Mandroid, Rodrigo Santoro, because he's good at having very made-over looks.
Okay.
From, like, 300 and such.
Oh, interesting.
As you know, Kuji Simu Liu.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking anything but.
So. Nope. Abbott Reeves. I went to an old favorite that I haven't done in so long. Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh.
He'd be good, yeah.
Yeah. Very nice.
And then for Bayou Betty, I made it Denise Crosby.
Why not?
Because I think it would be fun.
Yeah.
And for
get somebody back.
Yeah.
Right?
She'd be like, I'm in this fucking movie again?
But now she gets to be Bayou Betty. It's awesome. The director, Anna Lilia Mirpour, who for The Bad Batch, because for some reason I was thinking bonkers and an amputee. There we go.
Okay. A little different. Okay. My cast is going to cost a little bit of money, but...
Yours, hey,
actually, all of ours.
All
did.
Of ours. Well,
we got that's half our budget right there. Well, that's probably more budget than this movie had.
Yeah.
Okay. For my Fontana, Matthew McConaughey.
Ah, okay, there you go.
For Nora, I went with Margot Robbie.
Okay.
Nice.
For the Mandroid from Umbrella Academy, Tom Hopper.
He's very tall, nice.
Very tall dude. He was like popped in while I was watching the movie. I'm like, oh, there's a similar vibe there.
I've used him fairly recently, but yeah, he'd be...
Yeah, it just popped
in. I used him a long time ago when he was on the pirate show.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've used him. For Kuji, I had my iPad open. I was on Simu Liu, and then I'm like, no, there's only one chick in this movie.
Yeah.
I want to switch it up. So I changed it on the fly and went with Juju Shan Zetsu, who's in Wu Assassins.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
For Reeves, hopefully he still can do it, Scott Glenn. Yeah, no, he's getting long in the tooth, yeah. But Reeves looked pretty old in this.
Yeah.
I just, the voice, and then the way we've handled it now actually kind of works.
Yeah.
I think it could, because yeah, Scott Glenn, I mean, yeah, he's not really doing the action sequences, the AI is, so.
Yeah.
Oh, well, ironically enough, I almost went with James Spader for Reeves. I'm glad I didn't now that we go with the whole Ultron thing. But
yeah.
Boy, that would have been really on the
a
nose.
A little bit too on the nose, yeah.
For my Ray, changed where he was from, and I went with Nick Frost as Ray.
Like it.
For Luis, this one I'm going to have trouble pronouncing it. I don't know why I did this to myself. Utkarsh Ambudkar from Free Guy, Ghosts, and the Mindy Project.
He's very good.
Yes, but I thought he'd be a good sidekick.
Oh, yeah.
Comedy
He's
relief
so
character.
Funny. So funny.
Yeah, comedy relief character for the villains. And for Bayou Betty, I went with Naomi Harris.
Ah!
Based on her role in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Nice.
And for Takata, I went with Ken Kensai from Thor Dark World, who played Hogan. And he was in Letters from Iwo Jima.
Yeah, I didn't go with any of the other characters because I wasn't sure if we were keeping them, so I didn't bother.
I was going to do a legendary Japanese actor, and he passed away last year.
Oh, dang it. Why do we keep losing them?
I know. I'm like, oh, man. Oh, well.
I don't know. Yeah, I was thinking of Kuji. I could even do an estranged wife and just have Michelle Yeoh be in there doing her thing. I love her.
For my director, Fast and Furious director, Justin Lin.
There we go.
He knows he's crazy.
Booyah. You're like, okay, have we done enough insane stuff? And Justin Lin's like, hold my beer.
Right?
Well, yeah, that's Taika Waititi too.
Yeah, but
exactly.
Our directors would be just like looking at this movie going, it's a license to do anything I want.
We're going to have so much fun. Yep.
Oh, yeah. I can see them going, okay, here's what we're going to do.
Because it is nuts. Our remake's would be a lot of fun now that we've sort of talked out all the little flaws.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of flaws.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're along for the ride, I promise it's enjoyable.
Oh, yeah. It's a hoot. It's a lot of fun. It doesn't make it good. It's much like last week's movie where it's so bad it's good.
Yep.
Oh, you mean from 4 weeks ago?
4 weeks ago.
4 weeks ago, yes.
What, last week?
Last week. Last week was New Year's.
It just felt like last week.
Our last full episode is what I meant.
Yes. We're in 2022, right? Wink, wink.
Wink, nudge, nudge.
You do realize what you said in last week or the last episode.
You can't prove anything.
It's recorded.
You can't prove it. Says the person who knows this is a recorded entity.
This is about as evidentiary as it gets, Jay.
It won't hold up in a court of law. You can't prove that's me on tape.
Well, no, because it's not on tape.
Yeah.
Digital.
Digital. Not on tape.
Forever.
Just because I said I'm your host, Jason Bishop, means nothing.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to do with the audio thumbprint we have for you over how many episodes?
Officially 321 with this one. Yeah. Unofficially 340, I think we're at.
Yeah.
With all the specials and stuff.
Well, 320, I labeled the clip show 322, so this would be officially 323. But okay. Yeah, we're definitely in the 340s.
So 100 more, our 420 show. Just wondering.
Yeah, I'm not going to keep that kind of math.
By that time, will 420 even be a thing anymore?
There are 52 weeks in a year, so we'll we've be got old. At least that every year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of some sort of content.
We'll be much older by then.
We're much older than when we started.
I know.
Season 8, guys. Season 8.
Yes. And we know you're listening.
So glad you're back. We're glad to be back. Mm-hmm. We had a good Christmas. We had a good New Year's, potentially.
Sometimes a quiet New Year's can be a good New Year's, you know?
I know my Christmas was busy. I had stupid Christmas falling during the weekend when I'm normally off, and then Boxing. Got work Boxing Day, so I actually got less time than I normally do.
For sure, right?
No kidding.
I really got screwed on the time off this year.
But, well, you know, Sam and I thought of you while we were off.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I'm working Boxing Day, too.
Okay, then I'll think of both of you while I'm on my day off.
To be fair, I did volunteer because, well, overtime.
It's good money.
Overtime. Got to get that sweet, sweet overtime money. Well, if you like this episode and you like our type of crazy, spread that crazy around and tell your friends and foe about the show and where to find us and follow us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com if you want to send us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments and your fan challenges. Maybe we'll make your suggestion future episode.
Yes.
Yes.
There's some holidays we have trouble scraping stuff together, just so you know.
Yeah, so let us know what you're into, and we do add them to a list, and when we have a gap in the schedule, we will hit one of your suggestions, if it qualified. We usually like to keep at least a 20-year gap on the movie, so don't suggest anything too new. Don't suggest anything too good, or if you do, make sure nobody knows what it is. Because yes. Then you can fool us into doing it.
Yes.
And then you can watch, you can listen to us struggle so hard.
Damn you all to hell.
Because it's happened.
Yep. But as we curse your name.
We have more fun with the bad movies. Yep. We certainly enjoy watching a good one.
Yes.
Yes.
Because we don't get to do much of that anymore.
No.
No. No.
And when you get some time, visit our website, Sam.
invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
Yeah, and over there we got the links to all the podcast providers that you could ever want to find, plus some lists from 31 Days of Horror you can check out, and there's a handy button that'll take you to our TeePublic store. We got lots of cool stuff over there, t-shirts, mugs, posters, PPE masks, and so much more.
And it's probably on sale right now because, well, it's TeePublic, so
Yeah, exactly.
Usually on sale.
Yeah, watch our social media. That's a good place to watch our social media. We'll let you know when a sale's going on if you want to pick up one of our designs at a discount.
And some nice stuff. Some nice quality stuff.
And did you know that you can follow us on TeePublic? You can follow us on TeePublic to get notifications of when our store's on sale and when we drop new product.
Ooh.
Sign up, follow us, and you'll know when new product drops.
And when sales happen. There's that t-shirt you've had your eye on for months, and you finally get that sale notification. You go, now's the time.
Wow.
That's right.
Always do it with an evil laugh. It's more fun that way.
Oh, I have a shitty evil laugh. I have a shitty laugh. I have no laugh.
Sam's a quiet laugher.
We see it.
Yes.
We see the joy.
And every once in a while you hear, because that's about as loud as I get.
I had a joke that I'm not going to make at your expense because it's really bad. You'll be like, oh, you bastard.
Like that's ever stopped you.
I know. What's that? Is this the new 2022 new you?
Did you make a resolution, Jay?
Yes. Yes. Because it sounded like his orgasm sounds.
Oh.
Actually, that's about
right. Oh, damn it. I broke my resolution.
That's already.
Right. That's not even that mean. I'm not you bastard. I'm like, how did you know?
I used to be your roommate.
In a very thin-walled place, I'm assuming. Because you have, otherwise you're really listening for it. And then I have more questions.
It was a small house.
These are things I did not know about Jay.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you're being quiet and he knows what it sounds like, he's actively listening.
I've been your host, Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Who did this to you?
Abbott Reeves.
Reeves?
About a year ago, my plane went down in the Mexican wilderness. I was pulled half dead from the wreck and taken upriver. When I came to, I found this.
Your arms, your leg units. It's my work, all of it. These parts were designed for a service droid on the space platform. But you're human.
Yes.
Hold on. Reeves died 5 years ago.
No, he's prolonged his life with grafting and transplants.
This whole lab is funded by the Reeves Foundation. Now you tell me that Reeves is still alive. And what's more, he's stolen my designs and bastardized them. No offense.
None taken. I know what I am. And I know what I have to do. Return to Mexico and kill Abbott Reeves.